Well, we're about to listen to podcast number seven, Debt Tech podcast number seven, with the one and only David Hawkes. And I thought that that was a really, really good interview.
I agree, Peter. We've talked about getting David on for a while now. And when people listen to the podcast, they'll realize why. He talks a lot of sense. He makes some great points. And I'm sure the advisors who will be listening, well, not just advisors, but a lot of advisors, when they listen to the podcast, they'll feel heard and represented by what David was saying. Really tough times out there, and something needs to be done. But yeah, really enjoyed the conversation. I'm looking forward to getting some feedback and what the listeners think.
Yeah, so we're touching on, you know, anything from, you know, what options have we got left in debt advice? How do we approach it? What does debt advice really mean? You know, the holistic nature of it, all things that I suppose, you know, well, really enrich the debate, especially when it comes to the funding, free debt advice and so on. I think we captured a lot of stuff in there pretty succinctly.
I'm really keen, you know, we've talked about this, you and I, that some of the really good stuff is said in the parts of the conversations that aren't recorded. And we went into a bit of a sort of a deep dive into how we can bring trust into the advice sector and outcomes reporting. I think we need to do a separate podcast on that. So, yeah, but lots and lots of good stuff in there from David.
Brilliant. Look, let's run titles and let the audience listen to a really good interview.
Let's run the titles.
The Debt Tech Podcast with Peters and Lee.
No, it's not Peters and Lee. It's Peter and Lee.
I probably waffled a bit anyway. Do you think I went on a bit too long there?
I wasn't quite sure whether this is going to be a Monty Python scheme that I've come here for an argument or a debate.
Well, thank you for that. That's brightened up my day. I could almost imagine you as Zorro with a cape.
It's a cross between Groucho Marx and something else. I'm not sure what.
I've got faith in both of you, so.
And a bloody good lawyer.
The Debt Tech Podcast with Peter and Lee.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Debt Tech Podcast number seven. I'm Peter Warwick, and I'm joined by my long-suffering co-host, Lee Usher. Hello, Lee.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Yourself?
Good, good. Really excited about today's guests. I'll let you introduce them, but I've known this guy for many years. I always feel more intelligent after a meeting with him as well, which is good.
Whereas Lee always feels less intelligent after a meeting with me. I'm delighted to be introducing our guest today, none other than Policy and Campaigns Coordinator at Advice UK, David Hawkes. Hello, David.
Hello, and good morning, and great to see you both.
Great. Thanks for being our guest today. Now, you're a very well-known person in our industry, and I'm going to stop short of saying you've been around a bit, because that'd just be rude, but you've been involved in money advice for, well, certainly all this century, with roles like chair, vice chair of the IMA. You've been involved in MALG. You're well embedded. I think it's fairly safe to say you're well embedded in our industry and know your stuff.
I think I am a bit of an old hand, actually. I think I'm over 30 years in advice, and as you say, over 20 in sort of the debt advice arena. So yeah,
but not many people may know what you get up to in your spare time, and I'm not obviously going to have some grand expose here. I'm talking, of course, about book reading. Is it true? I've heard it. Well, good authority, i.e. Lee told me, that you achieved your goal of reading one book a week for a whole year.
I actually read, on average, two books a week for a whole year last year. So
wow,
I actually read 104. There we go.
Let me qualify this. What size books are we talking about? I mean, is there a minimum page count here? Or are we talking pamphlets?
It's a mixture. I mean, some were quite short, but some of them were, you know, 800 pages long. So wow. Yeah, a real mixture. But I think having achieved that target, which I had set myself of 104 books, two books a week, this year I'm going to take it a lot easier. I shall read every day, but I'm having zero targets.
That doesn't sound like a bad idea. So I suppose now this is a question I probably should have prepped you for, but if you could recommend one book to me out of that lot from last year, what would it be? God.
I think it would be quite an old book called The Old Wives' Tale by Arnold Bennett. And it's really about two sisters and it's set in the in Stoke-on-Trent in the Potteries, what Bennett called the Five Towns, and it really follows them from their teenage years right through to old age and death. And it's a remarkable piece of writing. It's really wonderful, and about 600 pages long, so it's a longish book, but a really rewarding one.
So I need a holiday to go and read a book, because typically I got out of the habit of reading books when my son came along, which is 19 years ago, and holidays are the only time when I get to read a book. So I'm going to have to take a note of that one and take it with me on my next holiday, and I'll report back and let you know how I got on.
Great, that's wonderful. I'll look forward to hearing what you think.
Thank you. So on to the subject for today, and I thought I'd just ask you if you could give us your thoughts around what's happening in our industry at the moment. We've been hearing a lot about redundancies in two large debt charities. How does this sit with everything? Remember, here we are in a crisis, cost of living crisis. We are anticipating, as we have been really since COVID began and before that, an even greater need for debt advice, and yet we're going to be having potentially less debt advisors out there. What's going on, David?
Well, that's a very good question. I mean, you know, everybody, there are lots of cliches out there, you know, we live in challenging times and so on, but we certainly do. I think this is easily the most difficult time that I've seen in advice in general, and in debt advice in particular, since I started getting involved. I think there are a number of factors at work. One of the things that's really interesting is, you know, never mind redundancies, which are significant, we're actually also seeing a lot of advisors actually, and experienced advisors, leaving the workforce. And I mean, you might have heard about the Great Retirement, and there's all this talk about people, you know, over 50 post-COVID, perhaps reevaluating their lives and deciding, actually, you know, there's something better I could be doing with my time. And I don't think, and debt advice is not immune to that. And I think conditions have got, I think, more and more difficult for advisors on the front line. And I think, again, many are starting to feel this isn't what I signed up for. You know, I wanted to become a debt advisor because I wanted to make positive changes to people's lives, improve their lives, you know, make things better, help solve their problems. And I think there's been a growing frustration within the sector about an inability to do that. I think, and there are a number of factors that drive into it. I think parts of it are funder driven with unrealistic targets and a lack of trust in advisors, I think, or what's seen as a perceived lack of trust, and a lot of kind of micromanagement. And then the other factor is, of course, in the current crisis, you might remember, I think late last year, Martin Lewis said, you know, I've run out of tools. And that's I think, what many debt advisors are feeling. You know, I mean, our latest figures showed that 39% of clients advised by Advice UK members had deficit budgets. And there's all this talk about debt solutions, but when clients don't have enough money to, you know, even pay for essentials, loads of solutions are closed off to them. And in any case, if the problems are ongoing, you're kind of just putting a sticking plaster over things, because, yeah, you might sort out the debt problem today, but you know that the client's going to be back again, you know, within a few months' time, through no fault of their own, but just because of the wider economic conditions. So I think all of that, I think, has led to a big demoralization of the sector. There's obviously the whole approach to commissioning, which we think is intensely problematic. We oppose the plans to commission by Money Pension Service to commission for regional debt advice. And we were very pleased that MAPS U-turned on that and changed their mind. And it's great that they've committed funding for up to 2025, but there's about a 10% cut in the amount of money, and of course no inflation allowance, which in practice means probably this year in effect another 10% cut. So the reality of that is, never mind people leaving the sector, there are going to need to be redundancies. And so that's in sort of, you know, if you like, primary face-to-face debt advice. As you said, we've seen two of the big charities are having to lay off hundreds of staff. So it's a huge irony that, you know, there's more demand, cases are more complex, but we've got real problems with staffing and capacity to actually respond.
So and you're right, I remember hearing Martin say just the same thing, and I can sort of understand why he did. I think, you know, I cast my mind back to when I was working at the CSA, having a meeting with the Centre for Social Justice, and, you know, we were talking there about how government, you know, can't just demand money out of people that owe it. You know, you have to find a fairer way of collecting debt, and the Cabinet Office did a lot of work on that, and that's all great. I suppose the point of mentioning that was, at that time, we were sort of saying, you know, there aren't many other things we can suggest to people. This is a poverty problem, not necessarily an overspending, bad budgeting problem. We've done all that. How far can the elastic stretch before something else has to give? And what gives? What do we do next?
Well, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. It seems to me that what we're seeing are big systemic problems. And ultimately, I think it's about income. I mean, there's been a huge emphasis on financial capability over the last 20 years. And I'm not going to say that that doesn't have any value, but ultimately, I think the problem is that, you know, people don't have enough money to live on. I think, and, you know, we've seen problems with low wages, and okay, there have been welcome increases in you know, the national minimum wage, you know, the living wage, and so on. We've seen an increasingly difficult, draconian, even a social security system, and unless you start addressing these issues, I kind of feel that, in a way, financial capability is sort of moving deck chairs around on the Titanic. It's not addressing the systemic problems, and that's what we really need to see. I mean, one of the, you know, we've done a lot of research at Advice UK on demand for advice, and we, quite a few years ago, we identified that, you know, between 30 and 40% of demand for advice and for debt advice is what we call failure demand. So it's systemic preventable failure, and if you're looking at, you know, who's the biggest problem here, it's actually the DWP. It's actually government, either central or local through council tax, that have been one of the main drivers of this demand for debt advice. Obviously, that's changed in the last couple of years with energy has been the number one issue in 2020, 2021. And, you know, I haven't done the analysis yet, but I'm confident that it will remain as the top issue in 2022. But nevertheless, you know, the big problems are around, you know, DWP, local, you know, council tax, you know, it's government debt. And it's, there's a kind of a sad irony there, isn't there, where, you know, on the one hand, the government's kind of putting, you know, through the levy, et cetera, is putting money into debt advice, but it's actually also creating a significant part of the problem in the first place. And you know, our view is you've got to tackle the systemic drivers for demand rather than just try and, as I said earlier, kind of, you know, put sticking plasters on the immediate presenting problems.
How do you see this playing out then, David? Because I think you're right. You used to, which has become a bit of a cliche now, we live in challenging times, but I can't remember it ever being this bad. Another role I've got is with a local citizens advice office supporting them. So I'm seeing firsthand the challenges that advisors are facing themselves as well. Let's not forget working conditions. They're not on a huge salary, but expected to deliver an increased workload. Mm. So with the numbers of advisors leaving, the challenges that people are facing, how does it all play out, and is there anything that we can do?
I I think ultimately there needs to be a change in mindset, and that change in mindset needs to come from government. I think there needs to be a recognition that current approaches are not working, and so I think our job and our responsibility is to move that discussion on, understand what hasn't worked, and think about ways of actually seriously addressing the root causes of all these problems. Otherwise, we're just kind of tinkering around at the edges. So, I mean, that's a big ask, but ultimately, that's what it has to be about, I think. And, you know, that takes time. You know, I mean, I think at Advice UK, we've quite often felt like a single lonely voice saying, you know, this is all wrong. I think there are some early signs that people are really starting to listen to what we've been saying now. And, you know, I think we need to understand, as I say, I think there needs to be more trust placed in the advice sector and in advisors. We need to have a better understanding about what's creating demand for advice, and then looking at what measures do we need to actually tackle that. And that's about understanding people's experience, understanding the complexity of their lives, understanding their journeys into advice, and actually listening to what matters to people. And I think if we can do all those things, then I think we'll see a significant improvement for people with debt problems. But also, we're going to transform the role of the advisor and actually make it, you know, take it back to being to that sense of job satisfaction that was the reason why people got involved in the first place.
Yeah, 100%.
Is there enough use of tech, you know, and sort of resources that are open to us these days, not to replace debt advisors, but to assist them and make, yeah, as we often say in these podcasts, these debt tech podcasts, we talk about, you know, how we can better equip debt advisors so they've got the best use of their time with their clients. Is there enough use of that at the moment, do you think?
I think there's growing use. I think there's massive potential, though. And, you know, I think it's, you know, I mean, our role at Advice UK, ultimately, it's about improving people's lives, but it's also about improving the environment within which our members as advice agencies work, and improve, you know, making it easier for advisors to provide people with the help and support that they need. And, you know, tech has a clear role in that. And that's something that we've argued for a very long time. You know, we want our members to have the freedom to deliver services to their local communities that they understand in a way that they know works. But we think that we can help them by providing the tools that assist them with that. I mean, you know, we Advice Pro, the case management system, is a main tool for us. And we think that brings massive benefits to people who use it. And we've now got, I think, probably close to 600 organizations that actually now subscribe to Advice Pro. So that's one element. Things like, I think, the standard financial statement have been incredibly useful. And then obviously the tools that Trustfolio provide are another example about how, you know, tools can be used to reduce some of the unnecessary administrative burdens that advisors deal with and help free up capacity to actually deal with what really matters to people.
Do you think there's enough sort of collaboration in the debt advice sector, enough sort of sharing of data? Is there anything we can do magically with data? And the reason I ask this is because when I was, again, at the CSA, and Francis McGee was doing quite a lot of work on how debt advice, free debt advice should be funded through MAPS and stuff like that, we talked quite a lot about, you know, what the drivers would be for some of the debt buyers, for example, and other creditors funding debt advice and perhaps getting some data back in exchange. I don't know what came of that. I mean, I don't really know what happened with all that. It all seemed to go quite quiet. It seems a great shame we couldn't make more progress. It felt like there was a reluctance to share data. And I don't know whether that's something that's a reality or exists today, or is it something that would even benefit us?
I mean, I'm not sure that there's necessarily reluctance to share data, but there are real problems. I mean, you know, we, as I mentioned, Advice Pro. I mean, we've got over 700 members of Advice UK, but it's only about 400 of those that actually use Advice Pro. Others use other systems. And if you think about our membership, you know, quite a few of our members, Advice is only a small part of what they do. So we have quite a few housing associations who are members, for example. So they've got their IT system set up to deal with their full offer to their to their tenants in this case. They're not going to necessarily switch everything to Advice Pro just because Advice is a small part of what they do. So, I mean, for us, it's a challenge. In a way, I would love it if I could press a button and get complete and comprehensive data on every single Advice UK member and all the clients, anonymized, obviously, but in a way that gives me that understanding. I can't do that. I can only get reports on those that use Advice Pro. And the difficulty is, of course, that the way that data is being collected by many of our other members is different. So, you know, you're looking at different different data fields, capturing data in different ways. So getting that complete picture, I mean, to say it's a challenge, I mean, it's a huge challenge. But I think that that's likely not to be a possible thing. I don't think it's going to be possible to do that ultimately for the reasons I've said, that, you know, organizations will collect data in different ways for different reasons, sometimes driven by funders as well, where funders want, you know, particular information collected in particular ways. And so to get that absolutely single consistent data set across the whole sector, I think that's a huge challenge, and I'm skeptical about whether we'll ever achieve that.
No, that's a fair comment. I mean, I suppose that sort of neatly takes me on to the $64 million question. How do we sort out the funding for Free Debt Advice? Why did MAPS come to a full stop? And where do we go from here? I mean, that's probably a rhetorical question more than what actually happened. But it feels like there's still work to do there. And I'm so sorry we couldn't get it cracked while I was sort of in my position at the CSA. But where do we go next with this?
I think... We need to, I think there are a number of potential routes that we could go down. And I think all of them have pluses and minuses. Mm-hmm. I mean, one potential thing to think about is whether we should, and this was a debate that I can remember taking place back in the 90s, but, and if not earlier, but should there be a statutory duty? Should Advice become a statutory duty on local authorities, say? And would that help address the problem? Now, to some extent, that's putting an additional burden on local authorities, but nevertheless, I think I think if you think about, you know, what are the pillars of justice in society, I would say, what are the fundamental rights? So, you know, I would strongly argue that right to advice is one of those, and so to me, I think there's a strong argument for saying make it a statutory duty. I think the other thing I would say, though, is that I think, you know, people don't present as neatly packaged debt cases. And I think sometimes we have a bit too much of a narrow vision when we talk about debt advice funding. Because when somebody comes to seek advice, yes, they might have a presenting debt problem, but almost certainly they've got a social security problem, they've got a housing problem, maybe they've got an employment problem. And I think if we're adopting, if you like, a whole person approach, which is something that we advocate, then actually we need to look at people's problems in the round. So I think the issue to me is not about debt advice funding per se, it's about funding for advice overall. And I think if we can get out of this kind of these slightly siloed approaches to the delivery advice, and instead of thinking about, you know, funding streams, think about the client and what does the client need, you know, what matters to them, and then say, right, let's the funding address that. I think that's a better longer term solution.
So that's a really good point you make, actually, because I suppose that the organisations that are being asked to fund and are funding at the moment are seeing it from purely their point of view, because their acute issue is they need to get a loan or a debt repaid, or not. You know, they just need to know which way it's going to go, what's the right solution for the customer. But they are looking at it purely through their lens. They're not seeing all those things. And so, you know, asking them to fund the cost of the advice being given is a tricky one, isn't it? It's almost like, you know, a bill being issued in apples and being paid with pears. I wonder whether that's possibly something that needs to be considered, because at the moment, yeah, the debt purchaser, let's say, is probably saying, yeah, I can fund more, but I need to see this. I need you to help me. That was one of the questions we put to some of the conversations in MAPS. The debt purchaser needs to see what's happening with the case, because they want to know if they're not, you know, if this person's never going to repay it, they want to write it off, you know. And so it was a really good motivator, but it never seemed to really tick the box. It never got the reaction I hoped it would. And maybe it's because of what you're saying, and that is, it's not just one debt. It's a more complex matter than that.
I think that's absolutely true. And obviously, you know, the levy is extraordinarily welcome, and the funding that comes in from certainly the consumer credit sector, you know, is valuable and is really important. But, you know, there needs to be more than that. And to be honest, I think it's probably not fair to put the whole of the burden on consumer credit industry. Sure. When actually, you know, certainly on, you know, I mean, certainly nowadays, you know, consumer credit in terms of Advice UK clients is probably in about fourth place, you know, in terms of, you know, the biggest issues, as I've mentioned, are energy, council tax, and actually private rent arrears. And I think, you know, there needs to be a bigger role, as I said, for local government. I think there needs to be a bigger role in terms of the energy companies. And there's also this whole issue around what we're doing with housing and the housing sector. And the thing is, from a consumer credit creditor's perspective, I think getting that message out that if you want sustainable solutions for people, you need to tackle and address these other surrounding and underlying issues is fundamental, because otherwise, you know, somebody's going to fall into arrears again and they're going to come back.
So, David, having listened to all that, and you may have said this already, but if I were to ask you what one thing, if you had the choice and the power and the ability and the capability to change just one thing in the industry at the moment, what would that thing be?
I think it would be focus on the right things, not the wrong things. And by the right things, I mean what matters to people.
Right.
Understanding and analyzing what difference are you actually making to somebody's life. The wrong things are arbitrary numeric targets. So that would be my key message. Following on from that, you know, I think trust advisors and trust the advice sector more. Mm-hmm. I think that's critical. See people as whole people and not just as a debt case. I think that's fundamental. Understand client journeys and listen to what matters to the people who are seeking advice, and design your services around that rather than some top-down system.
Fair enough. No, well put. And I think that summarizes the conversation we've had really, really well, to be honest with you. David, it's been an absolute pleasure, as always. We have the privilege and the pleasure to do plenty of work with yourself and Advice UK, and we thoroughly value it and enjoy every minute of it. Thank you very much. And thank you for joining us today. Thanks, David.
Well, thank you for inviting me. And yeah, it's great to speak with you as always.
Thanks, David.
So that's podcast number 7 all done and dusted. Well done for lasting till the very end. We hope you enjoyed listening to us talking with David Hawkes. Remember to look out for podcast number 8, which we'll be recording in the next few weeks. We're not quite sure who from our list of experts we'll be talking to just yet, but whoever it is, we'll be asking them how they see digital resources being better used to help customers in financial difficulty. In the meantime, if you'd like to know a bit more about what we lovingly call debt tech, head over to trustfolio.co.uk on the World Wide Web.